From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Oregon schools have had a rough go of it lately. Budget cuts and layoffs have plagued schools around the state. A huge reason for this economic challenge is declining enrollment in both urban and rural schools. But there might be an even bigger challenge related to less kids at school than low enrollment, our historic absenteeism rate. Today on the show, you'll hear about how Oregon is a national leader in absenteeism and hear how a U of O study is recommending some basic steps to hopefully get kids and schools back on track. Then, in the second part of the show, you'll hear how Bluish Boise is finding creative ways to get around a pride flag ban imposed by the deep red Idaho state legislature. That's next on Oregon on the Record. Getting kids to go to school and stay in school is an historic challenge here in Oregon. We're one of the leading states for absenteeism in the U.S. Today on the show, you'll hear from one of our reporters about a new approach developed at the U of O to try and keep more kids engaged and interested in school so that they walk through the front doors and stay till the final bell. KLCC's Zach Ziegler, thanks so much for coming in and chatting.
Yeah, no problem, Michael.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about two stories you've done recently. Let's start with one that's not such great news, but you've tackled this issue that we've seen for quite some time. It's Oregon's chronic school absenteeism. Just tee it up. What did you find out?
Yeah, so in the last school year, the number of students who were chronically absent, that means they missed 17 or more days in a year, was about a third. That's pretty high, actually the second highest of the states who have reported those numbers so far, behind Alaska. The District of Columbia is also ahead, but you know, the district, it's hard to say
sure.
So often with these rankings, do you include it as a state or not? So that has led to a lot of thought about these things, and the University of Oregon's HEDCO Institute recently released a summary of a soon-to-be-published meta-analysis of 49 studies. So meta-analysis is when a scholar takes a look at everything that's been published on a topic and tries to condense it down. Well, the University of Oregon's HEDCO Institute condensed it down even more to something that's a little more easily accessible for, busy educators.
Yeah, and so basically, by condensing it down, they can read it. It makes more, they can read it in less time. Give us an idea of what it's saying.
Yeah, so there are five areas that were effective at reducing chronic absenteeism in these studies. The first one was making curriculum more engaging. Any parent will look at you and go, yeah, that's not a surprise. Keep my kid from getting bored. Yeah, they'll
sure.
be more interested in showing up. Yeah, there was also the idea of fostering relationships and mentoring. That it could be an older person showing you the ropes. It could also be just something that from the world of exercise, an accountability buddy, that person who helps you get to the gym. Well,
sure.
The same thing could work for schools. There was also talk about increasing family connections with the school. So often schools are like these amorphous blobs mm-hmm. to a family. Giving them a face, that person that they're like, oh yeah, that person kind of represents the school, could help. That was something actually that I heard when I did a story when these numbers first came out, was done at Crow Applegate School District. Their superintendent told me about trying to make it so that parents had a better connection. There's also talk about better messaging about absences. I think of when I was in high school and, maybe I intentionally missed a class, we'll say, and there were just these automated messages because I went to a large high school. What I was told was, you can still have these, but there needs to be more information than just, your son or daughter missed one or more classes at whatever high school.
Sure, sure.
Tell them how many absences they have, what applies to being chronic, where they're getting towards. And the last one was, don't try just one thing, try multiple of the things that they talked about.
Okay. Obviously, historically, Oregon has had a challenge with absenteeism. And then, of course, many states saw their absenteeism rates go up right during COVID and afterwards. Is there any data that says that these five categories, are they kind of in response to the shock that was COVID, or this is general counsel that, you know, resonates regardless of what era we're in?
You know, it's a bit hard to say. These are definitely, some of these are a bit more tried and true methods that have been tried over the years and have long been kind of a standing thing for schools. I mean, like I mentioned, when I was in high school in the late 90s, they had those automated messages to try and talk to people about showing up to school and mm-hmm. letting parents know if their kid ditched a class, or, you know, sometimes it's just the case that as a parent, you forget to call in that absence and
sure.
that's your evening reminder.
Sure. Yeah. Talk a little bit more about this idea of mentors. I think that's fascinating because I like I said, you know, you and I work in an office setting, and there was always talking about in the workplace, you know, having mentors. This is, I think, somewhat revolutionary, or it sounds like it.
Yeah, there was some concern that maybe students aren't wanting to show up, you know, because they're having some challenges, or maybe they don't see the validity in showing up to school. That's mm-hmm. always a concern. And a little mentorship, having an adult or an older student who can help them through any problems they might be having, or show them a little bit of that validity, the reason behind why it's important to show up to school, can often be a help.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of the quotes you had in your story that I read was, you know, schools are inundated with so many things to do. It seems like, you know, both parents and kids have never been busier. Maybe talk a little bit about that there's so much going on. Does that contribute to kids just sort of punting and saying, I ain't going?
Yeah, I mean, that can always be an issue. It's one more thing for school administrators to have to keep track of. That is a reason that the HETCO Institute really decided to try and boil this down, you know, taking this soon-to-be-published meta-analysis that's, you know, papers like this can often be quite lengthy, and boiling it down to just a handful of pages with graphics and things that it's like, okay, I can wrap my head around this. I don't have to read a lofty academic study, because putting something like that on an administrator's desk, you know, that often becomes a problem for the summer. Putting it in this nice condensed thing is like, oh, I can read this in my, you know, in a few spare minutes, and now maybe we can start talking about implementing these changes now rather than waiting until next school year and maybe the paper gets forgotten. It's now much more accessible.
Well, you pointed out that the recommendations are, don't just try one of these things, try a multiple approach of all these different recommendations. I mean, is the hope that, you know, the vast majority of schools in the state, you know, that these are something that it sounds like it doesn't necessarily cost a lot of dollars. It's really just a commitment, right?
Yeah, that is always one thought, is just finding the time and finding that little bit, because schools are so strapped for any resource, be it cash, free time for staff. But using the multiple of these approaches, it's really about making sure a student doesn't fall through the cracks in some way, shape, or form. You know, to go back to what I was talking about, I had a bit of an attendance problem when I was a sophomore in high school.
Sure.
And I would try and intercept those calls. And then lo and behold, when my report card came out and my parents saw the number of absences, that's when I got in a lot of trouble. But the hope is, you know, if a student's doing that, the number four option about better messaging isn't going to get there.
Yeah.
So having some other way to communicate that those absences are a problem, be it an in-person, face-to-face thing like was talked about with increasing that family connection, that could help, or a variety of other ways, because there are ways that, you know, there are loopholes in all of these that someone might fall through.
Sure. Reading this, listening to it, the oft-used cliche, it takes a village, but obviously, you know, the schools have a responsibility, but then so do parents.
Yeah, yeah, and that is often the case, that it ultimately boils down to that, and maybe there are issues. That was one other thing that I heard when talking to schools back when this data came out, was that sometimes it is about travel. Sometimes it is about, you know, maybe the parent just can't get the student there that day. So that's always something that it boils down to, is what can we do to make sure that the parents see that it is a high priority? You know, all of a sudden it's, no, I got to talk with my boss because I need to get my child to school that day. I can't necessarily make that shift start at the time that they want, because education needs to be a priority.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're talking about absenteeism in the Beaver State, but I want to switch gears to another story, which I really enjoyed, about sort of trying to figure out, you know, interactions between humans and beavers in Corvallis. Talk about that story, because I think that was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, it was a fun trip that I got to make up to the Corvallis area. To be real specific, if you're up around there, the Bald Hill Natural Area, this particular area is a multi-use path off of Oak Creek Drive, mm-hmm. where along Mulkey Creek, some beavers had come back into the area. This area before trapping was just covered in beavers. Okay. They were all over the creeks and the rivers in the Corvallis area and really much of the Willamette River Valley. Hence Oregon State's name right there. And the problem was they were happy to see beavers return, but where they built their dam, it was flooding this multi-use path that is a really nice, accessible walkway. When I was there, it was kind of a rainy day, and I still saw people on many modes of travel showing up and making use of the path. Well, if it's underwater, that's not going to work very well. So they found a new, simpler way to allow water through and prevent that flooding.
And what is that?
So it's this process called a notch exclusion fence. And it's one of those things that when you hear about it, you're like, wow, why didn't someone think of that before? But to the folks I talked to, this was the first use of it in Oregon, which, you know, the Beaver State, you would think that it would have traveled here quicker. But it's really just simply, you go to a spot on the dam, you say, okay, we need, it'd be nice if the dam were a little lower. You carve a notch into it. That, you know, it's not all the way down, but it's, you know, you cut down a couple few feet.
Okay.
And then you take something like chain link or chicken wire, something that is big enough holes for like a small fish or some other animal to make it through, but big enough that a beaver can't get back into the area and repair it. And, you know, you put that around the notch, and all of a sudden you have kind of a permanent bypass for the water that acts as a spillway, for talking in terms of a, you know, a human-built dam. For once the water gets over the level that you desire, the beavers don't seem to mind it too much. You still get that nice wetland that a beaver dam can create. You know, when I was there, I saw salamanders and ducks and the animals that take advantage of that aquatic habitat, but I also saw a nice dry path.
Yeah, and I imagine too, I mean, obviously beavers fill an incredibly important role in the ecosystem, and it sounds like this is some ways a grand bargain between two-footed people and four-footed with flat-tail animals.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It allowed the beaver to really live in this area and have the habitat that they like to create, and to, you know, chomp and chew through the trees in the area, build onto that dam, but still get, for both to coexist is really the best term for it. And it's working really well. It was a rather easy solution to put in place as opposed to, you know, the drainage systems where they'll put a culvert under the dam. That can often create issues and clog up a little easier. Their goal is still someday to put in something like that on this dam, but this other way proved to be something really easy, and it's really doing the job that they hoped it would.
All right. From school absenteeism solutions to beaver dam solutions, he covers it all. Zach Ziegler, a reporter with us here at KLCC. Zach, thank you so much.
No problem.
Boise is a lot more liberal than the surrounding state of Idaho, and that divide is showcasing itself in a strange way. Pride flags, a local reporter explains next. Carolyn Kometsoulis, a reporter with the Idaho Statesman. Carolyn, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I was interested in a story you wrote about, I don't know what the best way to say it, kind of a workaround that the city of Boise is doing with regard to a pride flag ban in Idaho. Just generally, tell us about what's going on. Tell us about what your article was about.
Yeah, so this is the second year in a row that Idaho and Boise has been dealing with legislation like this. So in 2025, a Northern Idaho representative brought a bill which prevented governments from flying most flags.
Okay.
And so last year, there were some exceptions in the law. You could fly the U.S. flag, for example. You could fly official government flags, or for, you know, the official flag of a foreign country to commemorate special occasions. So the city of Boise in 2025, they bypassed the law by making the pride flag and an organ donor flag official city flags.
Hmm.
And so this legislative session, a different Idaho representative from Eagle, a Boise suburb, came up with a new law. And so what this law does is it bans... So basically what this law does is it bans official city flags that are added after January 1st, 2023, and it's a $2,000 fine per flag per day, and it would allow the attorney general to sue.
Okay. So I guess, you know, for sort of point of clarification, what does the city of Boise want to do? Have they expressed that they want to be able to display pride flags?
Yeah, so Boise Mayor Lauren McLean, she was one of the people who testified in opposition to the bill during the legislative session. And she has said that she, and she said in a press conference after testifying at the legislature that she was, quote, committed to ensuring that we're doing all that we can to make clear that everyone is welcome.
Okay, okay. So if I read your article right, they've also kind of, the city is sort of, found other creative ways to display, I don't know, flag adjacent type art or symbols around Boise. Is that correct?
So the city of Boise, they took their pride flag down the same day that Idaho Governor Brad Little signed this year's bill, which was March 31st. But now if you were to walk by Boise City Hall, they've got these rainbow striped wraps around the flagpoles that go almost all the way up to the flags themselves. There's also a large white sign that has the Progress rainbow colors that says, I believe, creating a city for everyone. And that's sort of on the windows of City Hall.
Okay. You know, Carolyn, I wonder if you could, for obviously our audience is mostly in Western and Central Oregon, and I'm wondering if you could kind of explain to us, you know, perhaps the political divide between Boise and the state legislature. Is there often kind of a little bit of contention around what the most populous city in the state wants to do versus what the what I understand is a predominantly Republican legislature what they want to do?
That's a great question. What I can say is that there have been laws that specifically pertain to Boise that the legislature has done over the years. For example, a few years ago, the legislature passed a bill to do by-district elections for cities above 100,000, which at the time was only Boise. There are two cities that did join Boise in the above 100,000 threshold, but and there is also a saying, I guess, which is the great state of Ada. which is kind of a, you know, I think kind of represents the idea of the urban and rural divide in Idaho.
Okay. Which, I mean, we see that here in Oregon as well, and certainly very different politically, say, Eastern Oregon and say, Portland. Carolyn, when you put your piece together, did you get any statements, opinions, comments from elected officials, legislators, the city council, that sort of thing?
Yes. So I talked with the person who brought the bill, Representative Ted Hill, and he said it's too early to tell whether lawmakers would bring a bill to address what the city of Boise ended up doing, but He did tell me that he was expecting something like this, and that he thought that she was insulting. So what he told me is that she's insulting everyone else, referring to Boise Mayor Lauren McLean, and asked, "Is that City Hall or some activist pride hall?"
Interesting. Are there pride celebrations in the city of Boise? Are there parades? You know, kind of, I guess my question is, you know, is the city, in addition to these types of displays, compared perhaps to the more rural areas of the state, is it more welcoming to the LGBTQ plus community?
Interestingly, actually, Boise's Pride Festival takes place in September, actually. Not in June, like a lot of places, but yeah, this year it's September 18th through 20th. And then, I have done some previous reporting. This is from a few years ago, but where activists said that LGBTQ Idahoans who are living outside Boise don't necessarily have the same resources or support and acceptance.
Interesting. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this. Carolyn Komatsoulis, who is a reporter with the Idaho Statesman, really appreciate you coming on and talking about this very interesting thing happening in Boise.
Thanks for having me.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Monday on the show, you'll hear about a new study which suggests that despite Oregon's anti-business reputation, more businesses have been opening in our state than closing over the past few years. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.